With IRN USA Radio News, I'm Larry Dickerson. The foreman of an Arizona jury that deadlocked over whether Jodi Arias should be put to death for murdering her ex-boyfriend believes Arias was mentally abused, but also believes that the alleged...
Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for the survival of Christian and Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that's going to determine what the future will bring. As I was just listening to the news broadcast talking about how all across the country, why legislature after legislature is voting for same-sex marriage, allowing gays and lesbians to get married, and how really this has certainly more and more support from the people, and certainly more and more companies are telling their people who work for them to actively support, talk about how normal same-sex marriage is, and certainly this is if you don't do that, why people would think you disapprove of it. And as we see what's going on, it's almost as if we live in a world gone mad. We know very well, as a physician, I can tell you that most people who are homosexual are not happy at all. A lot of them would like to get out of the lifestyle. They just don't know how to get out of it. They feel trapped in it. And, of course, the only thing that's going to get out of it and help them is a personal relationship with our Lord Jesus Christ. But why we're not allowed to talk about that in schools, we're not allowed to talk about that publicly. Certainly, you can't be pushing that sort of thing in the military today. In fact, now they certainly want people to be openly gay in the military. And, of course, this will totally demoralize our military. Well, basically, why are these things happening? Well, one reason I think these things are happening is because, of course, America is still the great bulwark for sending missionaries out all over the world to bring the Word of God to people in underdeveloped countries and lesser developed countries. How long God is going to tolerate what's going on in America, I don't know. But I believe if God is just, he's going to bring terrible judgment upon this country because our ministers, many of them are just not speaking out. And if they do speak out, it's not on a regular basis. And there's no organized effort on the part of organized Christianity to counter the moral degradation and breakdown of our society and the fact that they've taken God and prayer and the Ten Commandments out of our schools. And has anybody ever thought of challenging this idea of the wall of separation between church and state? Certainly Thomas Jefferson didn't believe in that. This was used by the Masonic Supreme Court to take God out of our schools, to destroy the foundation of Christianity. And basically, they've done a very good job of it. Over this evening is one of those missionaries who's been sent from America to elsewhere in the world. He's worked in Africa. He's worked in other nations. I'm certainly pushing the word of God, and it's always good to have Lauren Davis with us. Thank you so much for being with us tonight, Lauren.
Thank you, Dr. Stan. It's always a pleasure to be with you.
And, of course, you're just back from Africa. And but why don't you tell us what's going on with your ministry as you reach out to people throughout the dark continent and elsewhere to try to bring them into a personal relationship with our Lord?
Well, we've been working in Africa 25 years now, and we've built, I think, 276 churches in the interior of Africa in villages, and they also use them for schools. So we've been on the ground, and we know what is going on there. Also, we're working in India. A very interesting thing is that you see, the United Nations in Africa, everywhere, you see so many of the humanitarian efforts, through the churches, church or faith-based things working in the interior of Africa. But what has happened is that so much of the church has joined with the political, working in Africa and also other nations, the things that we have seen on the ground over there. And So by using the humanitarian, which I believe in helping people, you know, who are starving like this, but what's happened is they've come in, even like the genocide that happened.
Hold that thought. We'll be right back.
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulating coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
You may have heard about the 90 essential nutrients or the Mighty 90 needed for good health. But with all the products out there, what exactly are they talking about? The Mighty 90 is 16 vitamins, 12 amino acids, 60 plant-derived minerals, and 2 essential fatty acids. So, now you know. But with all the products you see and hear advertised, what exactly do you buy to come up with the Mighty 90 in the right ratios to promote good health? Youngevity has made it easy with the Healthy Start Pack, which contains one canister of Beyond Tangy Tangerine Vitamin and Plant-Derived Mineral Complex, one bottle of Bone and Joint Enriching OsteoFX Plus, and one bottle of EFA Plus Essential Fatty Acids, all in the proper ratios to promote good health and vitality. For more information or to order, call 1-800-991-8730. That's 1-800-991-8730 and ask about business opportunities.
Disaster can strike at any time. That's why Americans spend billions on insurance policies. But what about investing into disaster preparedness supplies, especially food? After Hurricane Sandy, people waited weeks for help to arrive. Be prepared for anything with Mountain House freeze-dried foods, the finest in the industry, packed in heavy-duty double enamel number 10 cans with over 99% of the oxygen removed for the longest shelf life of any product available. And the taste, absolutely delicious. Entrees, meats, vegetables, fruits, and desserts made in the USA. Just add hot water, wait 10 minutes, and serve. Save 25% on Mountain House number 10 cans, April 2nd through the 8th, with free shipping to the lower 48 states. Visit freezedryguy.com. That's freezedryguy.com. Or call 866-404-3663. 866-404-3663. Get 25% off April 2nd through the 8th. Act today. Don't miss out.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Lauren is simply saying he's been over there in Africa for 25 years, and basically he says that so much of the relief aid that we send in is simply used so that people don't have to work. And there's always been a strong work ethic until, of course, the do-gooders came in and they started feeding people so they didn't have to work. And this is exactly what we've happened here in the United States. I'll never forget when I was 13 and 14 years of age, I was out working in the fields. And suddenly a lot of people were working in the fields, and a lot of Americans were working in the fields. But why should anybody work in the fields in America today when they can get on welfare? We've got 48.8 million Americans on food stamps today. Do you think that none of these people can work? Why should they work when they can get free food, when they can get free health care through Medicaid, when they can get housing supplements, when they get all sorts of benefits from their government? And so we have to bring in people from other countries. Well, basically, Lauren is simply talking about how the aid is destroying Africa. I mean, certainly there are instances where aid is necessary, where there are famines. But of course, we are destroying the work ethic of so much of Africa in areas where there's not a shortage of food. There's a shortage of workers because they're all on the dole. Well, certainly, actually, because Lauren is describing, certainly there, he went into the Sudan, a very, very dangerous area, to actually build a church there. And certainly they were to have to go through sort of a no man's land. The local authorities actually provided guards for them, telling them this was an extremely dangerous area for them to be going into. But go right ahead with the story, Lauren.
Yes. When we got there in the Southern Sudan, and our team got set up to build a church and things, we saw what was going on the ground. Well, we saw that there was much drunkenness going on, you know, there. And so we just wondered, they call it pombe over there. Liquor is pombe. Beer is pombe. So we said, where did all the pombe come from? You know, how can they afford to get that? And they said, they take a lot of the aid, the grains and stuff that's given to them. And they make beer out of it. Instead of eating it, they make beer out of it. I'm sure, they eat a bunch of it, but I'm telling you, drunkenness was terrible on the ground there. So they were using the aid, the grains, to make pombe, to make beer, and getting drunk out of it. Now, a big question, and of course, that is not helping the people at all. But a big question is, why do you want to be bringing aid to people, and who actually can take care of themselves? So they know the land, that their ancestors have lived off the land for years. Why do you want to make people dependent on the foreign aid, on the United Nations, on IMF, and even also Christian aid, which you can have a good motivation and things. But even with Christian humanitarian works and bringing food in such like that, the people becoming dependent on that. And one thing that we realize, that there is a political agenda behind this. Because if you make people dependent on it, you can control them. If you feed people, you can control people. And so there is the agenda of the one world that is coming. And so the one world that is being pieced together is being done incrementally. They've called, I know you know this, for the UN and the 2000 Millennial Summit to be a one world government. But so you have the European Union and they have the American Union. Now they're talking about Canada and Mexico, but the African Union. And so if you come in and you feed them, then they are no longer sovereign nations like that. And then you can do anything you want to with those nations. So it looks to me like, there is a political agenda behind that. And I've seen, and this sounds pretty rough, but I've seen some church or some religious, like with Rick Warren, for example, working in Rwanda and other places, and using the church, as a place to feed the poor, etc. I think it came out in Time magazine or Newsweek magazine about that, using the church for that. But Rick Warren had a hook in it, and that was, they had to teach the purpose-driven life from his book before they would get humanitarian aid. And we were in Rwanda ourselves, and we have worked in all of East Africa. We worked in Congo, seven crusades in Congo, Tanzania, Zanzibar, Kenya, Africa, in Sudan. But what we have seen over there is that there is a merging of the political with the religious. And as you were talking about a little earlier, they talk about the separation of church and state. But now, when you use humanitarian aid and you have a hook in it, that you cannot receive this aid unless you come under our teaching, unless you become, part of our organization. And so that is not right to divvy out humanitarian aid like that. To me, whether a person is a Muslim or whatever, if anybody has a need, you give them. But you don't use aid, as a political tool. And there's a scripture in Revelation 17:2 that addresses this. It says, the great whore, which is the apostate, backslidden church, committed fornication with the kings of the earth. And that is the political. So this is the church, the apostate church, literally working with the political system. And you just wonder, you know, the question that comes to my mind is, we saw this. It's deeply going on in Africa, the political and the big organized church working hand in hand, and the Western church like this. You just wonder, well, why would the political, you know, work with the church like that? And the reason is the political, they need the vote. And the bishops and the pastors can deliver the votes to keep them in power. Then you ask the other question, well, why do the bishops and the pastors, why are they joining with the political? Well, they want the money. They are given money by the political leaders to deliver the vote. And so now the church is being misused completely and getting involved politically and literally to bring about an Antichrist agenda, which is totally against everything that the church was set up with. And the Bible says, "Thou shalt have no other gods before me." But the political has been pushing this interfaith system, and we see in Africa, in Tanzania, when we were down there in Dar es Salaam, we saw that many of the major bishops of the denominations, nearly all the denominations. And also seeing it in Kenya, joining with the Muslims, joining with the Hindus and others, and having joint religious services. Now, you know, Dr. Stan, what in the world is going on? We're not serving the same God. We're not serving the same God as Islam, as Hinduism. And yet, we have all come and joining and praying together, having joint services together. And we see even in the United States, what we saw over there, we see in the United States, anytime there is the government has, you know, some kind of meeting together, it's always interfaith. And, you know, where the Muslims now have equal time. And so this country is supposed to be a Christian country. And also pastors and bishops, you know, are supposed to stand for Christianity. But the Bible says, "Thou shalt have no other gods before me." And so we see Christianity has been breaking down from the inside here in America, where the interfaith is being pushed so strong. But what is happening here, Dr. Stan, is happening all over the world. It's happening in Africa and the whole wide world. And so when you see Christianity breaking down and was no longer representing the Bible, but it's being taken over and having a liberal agenda. For example, you were talking about homosexuality a little bit ago. I was absolutely astonished in Kenya how that $23 million was spent to put in a new constitution in Kenya that would legalize abortion and also homosexuality and everything that goes with that there.
Who put in the $23 million?
Sir?
Who put out the money?
The U.S.
The U.S., in other words, we're using our money to push our immorality all throughout the world and to destroy the moral fabric of other nations as they've destroyed the moral fabric here. And where is the outcry from our religious leaders? Why, it's deafening and it's silence. Go right ahead, Lauren.
Well, and it's deafening and silent because so many of the mainline denominations have sanctioned and gone along with the homosexual agenda. I just had an interview the other day in Scotland on a big secular radio station, but they told me that in Scotland now, you know, homosexuality has been legalized, the homosexual marriage, and also the Church of Scotland is now have voted overwhelmingly to ordain homosexual ministers.
And I think we just have to point out, ladies and gentlemen, why is this happening? Why? Because they've infiltrated our seminaries. They've infiltrated certainly the Catholic seminaries. They've infiltrated the Protestant seminaries. They know exactly what they're doing. And these people come in, profess to be such great Christians. They're there to destroy Christianity. And basically, they're being very effective. Our guest, of course, is Lauren Davis, who is seeing what's going on, certainly, in Africa, and he's talking about what's going on in Scotland. Same thing's going on in England. It's going on all over the world. We are up against a satanic movement, well-organized, well-coordinated, that has their agents at every level of our society, in both the Catholic and the Protestant churches.
Hello, folks. This is Steve Day, the director of Home for Health Lifestyle Center. And over the past years, we have been blessed by witnessing folks plagued by chronic illnesses gain restoration and get back their health after coming through our live-in Christian health retreat. Today, sickness and disease is everywhere. Cancer, MS, diabetes, and chronic diseases plague us. But there is hope, and Home for Health can help. We're here to help you in your time of need, and we would encourage you to go to the Home for Health website, www.homeforhealth.net. That's www.homeforhealth.net. Or you can call us today at 888-642-9644. That's 888-642-9644. Call Home for Health today and start your healing journey now.
Home for Health, truly do what you sound. Being free of disease is real well. Home for Health.
Americans love pills. America's 40 million seniors will have consumed 1.6 trillion pills during their lifetime, not counting vitamin pills. This is health journalist Bill Sardi. Americans are living longer an additional 18 years after they reach age 65. How will senior Americans spend that time? You've got it. Taking more and more pills to treat more and more disease. We need a better approach. How about a pill that promotes health rather than treats disease? That's where a pill I formulated comes in. It's called Longevinix, and it's a well-tested combination of herbs and vitamins proven to trigger genes activated by a limited-calorie diet, even mimicking physical exercise. Longevinix promotes healthy vision, heart pumping, immune response, blood clotting, and even mood. Call 1-866-405-4000 to order today. Healthy aging, Longevinix. Get started before you grow old. Call now, 1-866-405-4000. 405-4000.
This is Pastor David Whitney with Institute on the Constitution. Our founders constructed this constitutional republic with the intent that citizens would function as the final check on the power of civil government. But that design would only work if the citizens understood our form of government as well as their responsibilities within that structure. That's why Institute on the Constitution has put together a host kit that enables anyone, anywhere, with any group of people to instruct them on our founding documents. We urge you to order a host kit. You can call us toll free at 866-730-9796. That's 866-730-9796. Or you can order it on the web. Go to our website, iotconline.com. The only way our republic will survive is if its citizens arm themselves with the knowledge of our founding fathers' original intent of the Constitution, the Declaration, and the Bill of Rights. Call us, 866-730-9796.
Do you enjoy cooking? Would you like to learn the culinary secret that Barbara uses to enhance the flavor of Dr. Stan's food? Who's Barbara? She's Dr. Stan's wife. And what's her secret? She uses the delicious spices produced by Old Westport Spice and Trading Company. After using and enjoying their products for almost 20 years, Dr. Stan and Barbara decided they should offer their favorites to you. If you would like to please your family and enhance the flavor of your food, call 800-544-8927. That's 800-544-8927. I suggest you call today. Once again, the telephone number is 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927.
Back in a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest, Professor Lauren Davis, is talking about the tragedy that befell Sodom. Why? Because of homosexuality. And basically, God destroyed the ancient world because of the moral depravity. That was the Great Flood. He destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah, and there were about five cities there along the coast there of the Dead Sea, what we call the Dead Sea today. And he destroyed them with fire and brimstone. Wasn't the devil that did that. That was God. And he brought that judgment upon that region of the world because of its moral depravity. And if you don't think that God is going to bring his judgment on America, I think that you just don't understand God. It's not a matter of if, but when. Go right ahead, Lauren.
Yes. Also, you know, there are those pushing for men to have this same type of sex with women and not having natural sex, but that like a man would with a man. Now, that type of sexual activity is just a transition into homosexuality. And it says that God, in fact, the Word of God says that God also gave them up to uncleanness through the lust of their own heart. So the Bible says that this act is an unclean act for those who dishonor their own bodies between themselves. Now, a big issue now is going back to Africa on this, how the political is involved in promoting homosexuality. Another time we were in Kenya after the $23 million had been put to change the Constitution, you know, for homosexuality.
To change the Constitution. In Kenya, we put out $23 million to change the Constitution so they could legalize homosexuality. What sort of madness is that? Legalize abortion? Why would we be spending money to destroy the moral fabric of Kenya? Why, very simply, ladies and gentlemen, why do you think the major thing is America has been taken over by people who are using the financial and military power of the United States to bring about a one-world immoral society? And they want to destroy the moral fabric of nations throughout the world. Because, of course, that is how they're going to be able to control the depraved people that will be the byproduct of their efforts. And we're financing, ladies and gentlemen, $23 million from America to change the Constitution of Kenya to encourage depravity. Go right ahead.
Yes, and, you know, it's very odd. We're America is $16 trillion in debt. And we're giving $23 million. We have to cut back in our military. Yet we're giving $23 million to this one thing, to promote homosexuality in that country. Now, later on, they came in, and through human rights, and this is connected with the UN also and our country, they gave millions of dollars more promoting gay rights over there. Now, you know, we've been giving and been promoting fighting AIDS, HIV, in Kenya and Africa. Having lived there for 25 years, I know how bad it is. Just a few years ago, 800 people were dying of HIV every day in Kenya alone. And there's over 50 nations in Africa. That's only one African nation, 800. We think, well, that is horrible, and it is a horrible thing. And but one of the main things, it is proven scientifically, it's proven medically, one of the main things that promotes or spreads HIV is homosexuality. All right, now here we got two things going. We're giving millions and billions of dollars to fight HIV, which, like I said, I think we should fight it. But at the same time, we're giving millions of dollars promoting homosexuality, which we know causes and spreads HIV.
Well, Lauren, Chris, that is my field. I certainly spent almost a decade trying to stop the AIDS epidemic until I finally came to the realization that this is a created disease, created in a laboratory. I read the writings of people who had actually talked to people who had been part and parcel of the government program to create a new disease targeted specifically at blacks and homosexuals. And it's only in those areas of Africa, where, of course, they use this hepatitis B vaccine that contained the virus that they have the disease. And over there, 25-30% of the blacks in those areas certainly are infected. They're all going to die. This is all about population control. And until people understand that there really is a population control agenda out there, we can't understand the AIDS epidemic. We're supposedly putting out all this money to fight AIDS. We're not trying to fight AIDS, ladies and gentlemen. We created AIDS, and we're doing everything we can to block the implementation of the effective public health techniques that would have stopped the spread of the disease in Africa and here in the United States. If you've never read my population control agenda monograph, population control agenda, you'll find it on the internet. Population control agenda. Go up there, type it in, and read it, and weep.
Hi, this is Joyce Riley, and most of you now know why so many people agree that Miracle 2 soap really is a miracle. Miracle 2 products are now being used by farmers and ranchers to increase their yield. Mechanics and machinists use it in their shops. Chiropractors and physicians are using Miracle 2, and the uses are simply too numerous to mention. Dr. Stan and the folks at Radio Liberty knew right away that the listeners would benefit tremendously by using Miracle 2 products. You can enjoy the benefits of Miracle 2 and help Radio Liberty continue to broadcast Dr. Stan's message by calling 800-544-8927 to order your Miracle 2 today. After you've tried Miracle 2 around the house, you'll probably do just what so many others have done. Get rid of all those toxic cleaners and chemicals under your sink. Call Radio Liberty and order your Miracle 2 today. 800-544-8927. 800-544-8927. Dr. Stan Monteith and so many listeners know that Miracle 2 soap isn't just soap. It's a miracle.
For many decades, these great United States have had security and plenty because of the thousands of small farms which supply our every nutritional need. For generations, these dedicated men and women have supplied us with fresh food at reasonable cost. There is a chance that our food supply could be cut off in the event of a national emergency. You should carefully consider planting your own home garden. A seed bank from seedcatalog.com will make it almost easy. A seed bank contains every seed you'll need to plant a basic survival garden, all heirloom and all ready for you to create that special, necessary outdoor resource. Where can you find out more? Call 888-866-9132 or go to seedcatalog.com. Call 888-866-9132 right now and order seed for this year's garden. Seedcatalog.com.
So you finally decided to start taking a vitamin supplement. Those chewables and tablets are fine if you don't mind paying for something that is only absorbed about 4 to 6%. However, a liquid supplement can have a 90% absorption rate if you choose the right one. Youngevity offers a wide variety of liquid supplements with a 90% absorption rate or more. Beyond Tangy Tangerine may be the best one ever invented. It starts as a liquid, then is freeze-dried like those instant coffees into a crystal. Then all you have to do is add a couple of scoops to water. No refrigeration, no fuss, no mess. Not only do you get a complete multiple vitamin, Beyond Tangy Tangerine also has minerals, and it tastes fantastic. You'll want to drink it all day long. So the next time you reach for a vitamin supplement, reach for Beyond Tangy Tangerine from Youngevity. For more information or to order, call 1-800-991-8730. That's 1-800-991-8730. And ask about business opportunities.
The best way to eliminate this whole idea of homosexuality, same.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Lauren was just saying in Africa that many of the Africans had come to him and said that they believed that AIDS was actually introduced into Africa to kill off the blacks. And these black people are a lot smarter than most white people because they're absolutely right. AIDS was actually created in a laboratory. If you've never read Forbidden Secret, I think that's the title. Full disclosure by Gary Glum, but we get a reference to it, anybody wants it. It was written by a man who was actually told by a man who was part and parcel of the program that created this disease. And of course, the last thing they want, and this is murder. They actually created this disease to kill off. It's primarily targeted at blacks. It's actually, the genetic structure of the AIDS virus is such that it will attack the blacks because they have slightly different gene structure than whites. It's a race-specific disease, which is why they've lost so many people in Africa, and why here in the United States, almost, not quite, but almost half of all the people in the United States that have AIDS or have died of AIDS have been black. Do you think that's just coincidence? Of course not. Well, anyway, of course, Lauren, you go right ahead, but you were just saying that actually the Africans had come to you and told you they thought this disease was specifically introduced into Africa to kill off the blacks. And I'm telling you that's exactly true. Go right ahead.
Well, an amazing thing, Dr. Stan, is the promotion of homosexuality in Africa is being promoted by the human rights. By human rights in the United Nations. They're the ones putting up the funds to promote this. Now, if they really wanted to stop HIV in Africa, they would fight against homosexuality instead of promoting it. But here's what's happened to them over there. Okay, they get involved in homosexuality, then they go home to their wives. They contract HIV, then they spread it to their wives. And then they go out, you know, to their different lovers. Pardon me. They switch back and forth. And so it is literally killing off the families. And it is such suffering. I was in Dodoma, Tanzania one time. I was holding a crusade. And a woman came to me and she said, "I want you to come to my house. My son is dying of HIV. I went to their home with some of my team members. And when I walked in there, they pulled the sheet off of this young man. He was about 22 years of age. He was nothing but skeleton. I mean, just a little skin on him. And also just looked like big blotches were torn off of him. So HIV, I've seen it in Africa. It is an absolute horror what it does to people and the suffering that they go through. In Kenya, 800 were dying of HIV every day. And I've been into the morgues there, and I've seen just bodies stacked like cordwood. I mean, it was a horror beyond imagination. Well, you know, the human rights is to live. Instead of doing something, promoting and putting up millions of dollars of things you know that's going to have people to contract this disease, why in the world are we not using money like that, you know, to fight against it? I went on the radio in Kenya and Tanzania and actually Uganda, and I spoke the message why God destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. Actually, we ended up going nationally in these different countries. Well, what I was shocked at, in fact, first of all, we went on a big Christian station in Kenya. What shocked me, and so much, Dr. Stan, is that the massive response we had, actually, I think we ended up giving out 30,000 CDs, 26,000 CDs mostly related to this. But so many who were professing Christians, all right, professing Christians calling in, saying they were going to Christian churches, but they were involved in homosexuality. And also pastors were calling, saying they were involved in homosexuality. There was one pastor who contacted us. He said he belongs to a ministerial association. He requested 800 CDs. That ministerial association was involved in homosexuality. He was. He said he heard my CD, my message on why God destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. And he said he was in his room and he wept and wept. He was a married man. So you can imagine, he was bringing this disease home to his wife. And then you have so many orphans in Africa. And, you know, the destruction to the family, the destruction and the pain and the suffering that people go through with it.
But Lauren, a good thing
is the people who were calling in were repenting of their sin. They realized this is a sin against God. And why this thing is going on is churches and pastors are not preaching against sin anymore. The only thing is sin is that you do something socially that is not politically correct. And actually today,
It would be, the sin would be, well, if you spoke against abortion, you spoke against homosexuality, well, they would consider, well, that is a sin. You're not a loving sin. Well, trying to save people's lives is not a sin. Speaking the word of God, and not only will it destroy you physically, but adultery, well, homosexuality, these sins, the Bible says you will lose your soul getting involved in this. And so why in the world would the church and church leaders, one church denomination after another, vote to ordain homosexual pastors like the Episcopal Church, the Anglican, on and on down the line there? The insanity is in the church. If God would give us true men of God, churches that stand up for homosexual marriage, ordaining homosexuals, they are not Christian churches anymore. Anyone that stands opposite of what the Bible says, of what God says, they're not a Christian. I don't care how big a church office that they hold, they are not saved. The Bible says they changed the truth of God into a lie. And they did this in the name of love, in the name of a love gospel. But it says, for this cause, God gave them up. God gave up on these people and gave them over to vile affections. The Bible talks about homosexuality as being vile affection. And people can get angry, but this is not me saying it. This is God. For he said even the women did change the natural use to that which is against nature. And likewise, also the men, leaving the natural use of the woman, they burned in their lust one towards another. Men with men, working that which is unseemly, and receiving in themselves that recompense of the reward. And I believe, you know, when you sin against God, one thing Jesus said when he forgave that woman in adultery, he said, sin no more. Because these sins that the Bible speaks about, it opens the door for disease to come in. And HIV is a terminal disease, and you as a medical doctor, you understand that. But God didn't put up rules and the Ten Commandments just to restrict mankind, but to keep us from destroying ourselves.
And there is a force on the other side that wants to destroy humanity, and that's what this is all, population control. What's abortion about? It's about population control. What's homosexuality about? It's about population control. What's AIDS about? It's about population control. There are all sorts of new diseases out there. Cancer is on the rise. And effective treatments of cancer are effectively banned here in America. In fact, if you open up a clinic and try to use Laetril, which actually is not the best of all treatments, but it's certainly an effective treatment for many cases of cancer, why they would come and put you in prison. And there are many treatments for cancer we could talk about some other time that are effectively being banned here in America. Why is that? They know very well if you have a cell phone and you carry it in your pocket, if you're a male, why you hope your sperm count will go down 50%, and the sperm that are not destroyed will be altered, and you may very well have a defective child. They know exactly what they're doing. Why do you think that they're putting aluminum into our air and certainly mercury into the vaccines, and mercury into your mouth with dental fillings, and mercury into so many of the products that you're going to be getting today? Understand, there is a population control program throughout the world today. Why? Because they want to kill God's highest creation, and the average individual cannot believe that there's an orchestrated effort to kill off most of the people in the world today. Go right ahead, Lauren.
Yes, and related to population control and abortion. In Africa, you know, we spent a lot of time, you know, in the interior, in the Masai Mara, where we built many churches, and there's a lot of lions there. But one thing, that a big male lion, when he comes in to take over a pride of lions, a female, the first thing he does is he kills all of her cubs. Because she won't come into estrus until her cubs are killed. And so he kills them. And well, we look at that and we think that is so horrible. That's being so savage. No wonder they call him a beast. But what difference is there of a lion coming in and killing the cubs, or a mama killing her own cub, aborting it and killing her own? That, you know, we'll talk about savagery, talk about being a beast. And so the Bible says that they are without understanding, They're without natural affection, and everybody is just looking for their own pleasure right now. On the social networks they have now that are getting very, very popular, they have what they call hookup. And this is just for young people to hook up with other people for the purpose of having sex. They don't even have a relationship with it or anything else. They're putting pictures of themselves totally nude or having a sexual act on the social network. And so the morals have been broken down so much, our young people don't even know what's right from wrong, because in our school, you cannot talk about the Ten Commandments. They've taken them out of the schools. You cannot bring a Bible in the schools. And so this is where we have degenerated to right now on a practical level, till our youth are destroying themselves, pushing the lust of the flesh as far as they can, and then they get burned out heterosexually, and then they start experimenting homosexual. If you don't think anything is wrong, you'll do anything. And so many preachers today are saying the Ten Commandments are done away with. Well, you know, God says, thou shalt not steal. Has that been done away with? That's in the Ten Commandments. Thou shalt not commit adultery. Has that been done away with? Honor your father and mother. On and on down the line. But they say, well, it's a love gospel. It doesn't matter what you do. Just say Jesus and just then go live the way you want. But the Bible talks about the lust of the flesh will destroy you. If you live by the flesh, it will kill you. And so the Bible talks about those who will not inherit the kingdom of God. He says, be not deceived in 1 Corinthians 6, verse 9 to 10. Be not deceived. Fornicators, idolaters, adulterers, effeminate. That's those involved in homosexuality. Abusers of themselves with mankind. That's the same thing. They shall not inherit the kingdom of God. The Bible clearly says, if you're involved in homosexuality and the sins of the flesh, you will not go to heaven. Jesus said, not everyone who says, Lord, Lord, will inherit the kingdom of God, but that he that doth the will of God. And when you find Jesus, you're changed. That's what being born again is. Old things are passed away. All things are become new. But so many professing Christians today, actually, morally, they're no different than people who call themselves non-Christians. No wonder they think Christians are hypocrites.
Lauren, before 2 Timothy 3:7-8
really encapsulates it. It says, ever learning, but never coming to the knowledge of the truth. Well, so Lauren, we've got all these universities. We've got all these schools, and we're ever learning, but they're teaching actually opposite civility. They're changing our culture. The culture of America that was founded upon the Bible. Missionaries went out to Africa. They went out to others. And it changed the culture. That's what brought civilization. Now we are reverting to paganism. And the great ancient empires of Pompeii, of Rome, of Greece, they fell, not just because of their corruption, but because of the way they were morally, and that they were involved greatly in homosexuality, just like Sodom and Gomorrah.
Lauren, before we go on, I wanted you to get out your address and your website so people would know how they can get in touch with your ministry, and then we'll go right back to the subject. Go ahead.
Yes. My website is laurendavis.com, LorenDavis.com, and I actually have the article on there, Why God Destroyed Sodom and Gomorrah. And then I have another website, combineharvesting.com, which I have internet radio, Lauren Davis Internet Radio, and you can hear me speak that message on that. My email address is laurendavisministries@hotmail.com, L-O-R-E-N, Davis Ministries at hotmail.com.
Thank you very much. And Lauren, every time he comes back to the States, we will have him on for three or four of our different networks because we want to get his message out. He's on the front lines of the battle. I wish I was young enough to go over and do what he's doing, but God's put me here and he's put Lauren over into Africa. And when will he be going back?
Well, sometime in the fall.
Okay, fine. So basically, he's been over there for many, many years, many decades. But you go right ahead, and I share your concern. Basically, we're seeing the destruction of morality, not only in the United States and Europe, but all throughout the world, and we're financing it, ladies and gentlemen. Your tax money is going to Kenya so that they can change their constitution, so they can encourage abortion and homosexuality. And why don't we have an outcry here in America? Why? When was the last time you heard one of our major ministers come on and try to get to the public and say what is going on is wrong? Go right ahead.
So actually, you know, our country, which, you know, for many years sent out missionaries, and they were preaching the gospel. They were preaching Jesus is the only way. Now, the new missionary, most of them are preaching interfaith. That is joining with the Muslim, the Hindus, with other. And they say, after all, there are many ways to God. They just called him by the same name. And we could spend a lot of time just talking right there. But then promoting immorality. Financing immorality, even as a government financing that, absolutely, it's insane. Are the founders of this country would roll over in their graves if they heard about this. But God promised, in His Word that He would judge all those nations that are involved in such sins like this. In Proverbs 14, verse 34. It says, righteousness exalts a nation, but sin is a reproach to any people. And so sin is a reproach to America. It is breaking America down. There is no foreign nation that could take this country from without. But it's just like happened in Rome, what happened in ancient Greece, in ancient Egypt, in Pompeii. We are decaying morally from the inside. And it seems like, you know, that very few ministers will even speak up what the Word of God says like this. And when you see ministers even coming in and promoting it and going along with it, it's actually unbelievable.
Hold that thought.
Hello, folks. This is Steve Day, the director of Home for Health Lifestyle Center. And over the past years, we have been blessed by witnessing folks plagued by chronic illnesses gain restoration and get back their health after coming through our live-in Christian health retreat. Today, sickness and disease is everywhere. Cancer, MS, diabetes, and chronic diseases plague us. But there is hope, and Home for Health can help. We're here to help you in your time of need, and we would encourage you to go to the Home for Health website, www.homeforhealth.net. That's www.homeforhealth.net. Or you can call us today at 888-642-9644. That's 888-642-9644. Call Home for Health today and start your healing journey now.
Home for Health, truly do what we do sound. Being free of disease is real well. Home for Health.
There is a disturbing trend here in these United States that is progressing unnoticed and without constraint. From the Supreme Court to the smallest county seat, we have seen the judiciary make decisions which are more legislative than interpretive. Our founding fathers designed our three-part governmental system to have checks and balances upon each other. Each branch of the government has now taken it upon itself power that was never intended for it to have. The judicial branch in particular needs reform. We must pass laws which bring a renewed sense of justice to our nation's court system. I urge you to go to judicialreformnow.com. That's judicialreformnow.com. There you can find out what you can do to stem the tide of judicial malpractice. judicialreformnow.com.
Most men, when they reach 60 years of age, have urinary tract problems. They have to urinate frequently during the day, and they have to get up several times every night. What's the solution? Many men use a herbal product called Prostate Support. It contains saw palmetto and stinging thistle. It's available from Radio Liberty. Dr. Stan takes Prostate Support and recommends it. And thousands of men take Prostate Support every day because it relieves their urinary tract symptoms. If you would like to try Prostate Support, Call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Once again, the telephone number for prostate support is 800-544-8927. And I suggest you call today.
Okay, stop it.
Hello, folks. This is Steve Day, the director.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you enjoyed this.
Over the past years, we've been blessed by witnessing folks plagued by chronic illnesses gain restoration.
What's going on in Africa as the work that they've done there for so many years is being undermined by ministers from the more progressive churches who are coming over and saying, we all worship the same God. Ladies and gentlemen, we do not worship the same God. There is a movement. It's for a one-world government, a one-world financial system, and a one-world religion, which means the destruction of the Christianity as we know it. And understand that Christianity is under attack today. Now, basically, I hope you want to get my book. It's called The Brotherhood of Darkness. I hope you want to get our material on, certainly on AIDS. I wrote a book called AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic. And it is certainly the finest book on the public health issues dealing with AIDS. Unfortunately, when I wrote it, I didn't really believe that they had actually created this virus because they wanted to kill people. Dr. Lorraine Day kept telling me that, and I just didn't want to believe anything could be that horrible. Until finally it became very apparent. She was right and I was wrong. But my book, AIDS, the Unnecessary Epidemic, will give you the history of the AIDS epidemic. Our efforts to do it was right and how we were undermined by organized medicine at the highest level. And as a result, over 600,000 Americans have died here and probably another million and a half carry this virus and they're going to die. But in Africa, they'll admit 30 million have died. I think it's probably a couple of hundred million. Basically, in many areas of Africa, people die so quickly they can't even build the coffins rapidly enough for them. You need to get my talk on AIDS, pardon me, on Agenda 21, the covert plan, and my talk on population control, the covert agenda, because both of them cover the same techniques. And there are so many things they're doing today to actually undermine certainly our population, to produce infertility. They're poisoning our water. They're poisoning our air. They're poisoning our vaccines. They're poisoning our food. They know exactly what they're doing. Aspartame is in over 5,000 products that are eaten in America. And aspartame alters fertility and promotes cancer. They know this same thing is true, certainly for aluminum. It's true for lead. It's true for mercury. It's true for fluoride. And they're fluoridating over 68% of the water supplies in America. And fluoride lowers intelligence, promotes cancer, and decreases fertility. Why, if this is true, don't you hear it elsewhere? Because the media is controlled by six major corporations. And if you don't believe it, you need to get the book, The New Media Monopoly, written by a left-wing professor from the University of California. But he's absolutely right, Professor Ben Bagdikian. Studied this for 30 years, The New Media Monopoly. All of these items are available by calling 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-5-HIV-WAR, because we are at war today. And basically, you can get my the material. We talked about my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, my talk on Agenda 21, my talk certainly on the planned, pardon me, population control agenda. We have two other talks, planned population reduction and Nandare College genocide. That's planned population reduction, Nandare College genocide. They all tell the same thing. If you want a copy of the population control agenda monograph, you can pull it down off the internet. Just type in population control agenda and you'll put in my name. Don't have to. It'll come up. Or you can go to our website, radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. And you pull it down there. Or if you get anything, purchase it from us. Just ask for a copy of the Population Control Agenda. We'll send it free of charge. If you're in a position to help finance what we do, we'd love to hear from you. Remember, I don't take a salary. My wife doesn't take a salary. She works 10 hours a day. But God has given her to me, and I appreciate what she does. We couldn't do what we do without her. And we hope you want to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters. We ask you to pray for America. We ask you to pray for revival, but we ask you, please, to pray for my ministry, Radio Liberty, for our provision and our protection. We'll be back in just a moment with another exciting program.
Let us swear allegiance to a land that's free. Let us all be grateful.
This is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay, and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at and that illusion is usually king. But in the battle for the survival of Christian and Western civilization, it's going to be reality and not illusion or delusion that'll determine what the future will bring. And I need to remind you the views expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, and supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and hopefully for the next hour, they're going to be the views of our good friend William Grigg. And William, of course, was the senior editor of the New American magazine for many years. He was the editor of Republic magazine for a time. He certainly writes regular articles today. You'll find them at Lou Rockwell. You'll find them on his blog. And you'll find them, certainly, the Radio Liberty monthly newsletter. William writes that for us. He does a good job. I'm at a point in life where I have so many things to do, I can't do that. And he's doing a great job. William, thank you very much for being with us tonight.
Dr. Stan, it's always a privilege and a pleasure to be with you. And I really appreciate your kindness.
Well, why don't you go ahead? Now, what are we going to be talking about tonight?
I wanted to talk about a number of things, but when we discuss the way that the government that afflicts us treats people, and of course you and I have discussed this on many occasions, the fact that we have a system of government that is notionally far better than the actual government ruling us right now. We have a wonderful blueprint for a constitutional republic, a system in which we would be ruled by law rather than men. That's all aspirational, and unfortunately the people who run the apparatus of government have no fidelity to that concept. They have no respect for our rights as individuals. They see us as raw material to be used in pursuit of their own objectives. When we talk about these things, often we look at them from the perspective of sort of a global overview of what the Brotherhood of Darkness, as you aptly characterize them, are up to in deciding the fates of entire nations or regions and ultimately, of course, of the whole globe. But every once in a while, I think it's worthwhile to examine on a much smaller scale some individualized injustices and to assess these in terms of what they tell us about the nature of corrupted power, because there really is no such thing as a government that is too small and too local and too immediate that it cannot ruin your life, immiserate you, impoverish you, or conceivably annihilate you. And during the war for independence, there was somebody who was a loyalist. He was not what we would now, of course, refer to as a patriot, somebody who believed in the independence of the colonies in Great Britain. He's somebody who wanted to maintain the relationship between the colonies and the mother country. And during one of the debates, he famously said that it made no sense to be obsessing about a tyrant 3,000 miles away
rather than focusing on 3,000 tyrants that are just 1 mile away. And too often, of course, we find ourselves looking at what's going on through the wrong end of the telescope. I don't by any means intend to minimize the danger posed by Washington or posed by global institutions that have been created by this semi-submerged, self-replicating political elite. You and I both agree, as do the people who are listening to our conversation this evening on your radio program, that global government is a horrible idea. It's literally a demonic idea. It's something that was spawned in the minds of horrible people thousands of years ago. It's the perennial aspiration of people who recognize no law higher than their own ambition. But I wanted to share, when we get back, of course, from the break that's coming up, a story about something that's happening in a little town up in northern Idaho that I think so perfectly encapsulates the attitude of the people who presume to rule us and the way they treat those of us who don't submit to them and comport to their will. It's a horrible story involving an innocent woman whose life is being ruined for no good reason, and it's a microcosm of what's going on in the world.
And basically, of course, today, if you go along with the system, why, you're not going to get into much trouble. But if you don't go along with the system, why, we're going to lose our freedom. And we need more and more people who have the courage to take a stand at this time in history, because if we don't stand up now, we may never have a chance. So we may very well be on our knees. William, go right ahead.
You're exactly right, Dr. Stan, when you say that if we don't take a stand right now, we'll be forced to live on our knees or crawl on our bellies. And that, of course, is a choice that confronted our patriot forebears, and it's a choice that's been thrust upon many other people throughout human history. The problem is that most Americans today have become so inured to creature comforts and so obsessed with their standing in the eyes of people they don't know. I mean, that's one of the downsides of social media right now, is people become obsessed with an ephemeral image that is insubstantial, that they maintain through Facebook and Twitter and these other media of social interaction through cyberspace. People become obsessed with what they think other people think about them. It really is a really bizarre variant of man's perennial sin, which is idolatry. But the story that I wanted to tell you about involves a 58-year-old woman named Rita Hutchins. She's an internationally respected quilt artist. She's the author of a book called Totally Tubular Quilt. This gives you an idea of what her life is like. She's an artist. She has an artistic disposition. She was born in upstate New York, I believe. And she migrated to Idaho 35 years ago because she had become heartily and understandably sick of being regulated to death by the people in Albany. And New York, of course, right now was turning into something akin to a full-blown People's Republic, not merely the despotic city-state of New York City under Commissar Bloomberg, but the entire state of New York through the so-called SAFE Act, if nothing else, this hideous, impulsively enacted civilian disarmament measure that was put into play by the Albany legislature earlier this year. She saw the trends 35 years ago, and she said to herself, where would I go where I could be rid of these people? So trying to flee the despots who were ruling that state, she went almost the entire length of the continent away west to Idaho, a little town called Sandpoint. It's about 7,000 people, roughly the same size as Payette, which is where I live with my family. It is about 8 to 10 hours directly north of where we live. You go up the long axis of Idaho along the panhandle almost to the Canadian border, and you'll find Sandpoint. Sandpoint is one of two or three outposts of the so-called liberal or progressive or new age population in the state of Idaho. Idaho, of course, using the familiar nomenclature, is the reddest of red states. We are as Republican as it is possible to be. With the possible exception of Utah, there is no more Republican state in the Union than Idaho. Most people who are aware of Idaho would perceive Idaho to be sort of the last redoubt of frontier individualism.
Hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and suddenly William is telling us about a lady named Rita Hutchins who lives in Sandpoint, Idaho. She'd come here some well over 38 years ago, something like that, certainly, because she wanted to get away from the oppressive situation that she found in New York, where she lived. So she came to certainly to Idaho, thinking she'd get away from the government certainly dominating her life. And so, but basically, of course, Sandpoint is one of those a few areas of Idaho where you certainly have a small group of powerful bureaucrats who want to run everything in a hierarchy within the local government that is quite willing to take away people's freedom in the name of doing what's expedient. But go right ahead. Tell us the story.
That's
about
a pretty good summation of their attitude. Sandpoint is one of a couple of places in Idaho that are afflicted with people of that variety. Sun Valley is another one. Sun Valley is sort of the consulate, if you will, for the Hollywood crowd. Sandpoint tends to be a place of resort for people who are native-born Idahoans who have imbibed whatever elixir or whatever poison would turn them into progressives. And so you have a municipal government in Sandpoint and a county government in Bonner County that is pretty heavily populated with the sort of people who believe that they have been blessed by nature or Gaia or the disembodied forces of history to lord it over the rest of us. Well, Rita Hutchins is somebody who, before 2011, had no criminal record. She had a number of traffic infractions. You can look at the Idaho Repository, which is public records, and you can see that she had traffic infractions and problems of the sort that are predictable in the course of anybody's life. But she never had a run-in with police or law enforcement or with municipal government of any kind until November of 2011. She was renting properties and had to evict a tenant who was a deadbeat and a rather disreputable person. She served a notice of eviction on this tenant on the same day that the tenant was arrested by police on a number of outstanding warrants. The following day, Rita went by her rental apartment, and it was her intention to find out if the water had been turned off, if the power had been turned off. She had to do maintenance. She was going to have to clean up. The tenant was going to have to vacate very quickly, and Rita noticed that the tenant was talking with a police officer by the name of Teresa Herberger. And so she drove by, not wanting to be part of that conversation because she'd known that the tenant had been in trouble. And then she came back a few minutes later and drove by again and saw that the conversation was still underway. Now, bear in mind that Rita owned the property. She had her name on the deed. She was the owner of record of that property. She was on a public street when she drove by the apartment twice. She was there for a legitimate reason. She was trying to find out if the utilities had been shut down. But while she drove by the second time, the tenant, who bear in mind is somebody who had been arrested the previous day, told the police officer, "I think that woman is stalking me." And on the basis of this accusation, the police officer got in her vehicle and followed Rita Hutchins back to her home. After Rita got to her home, she got out of her car and then went onto her own property. And the officer said, "Hey, I need to talk to you." And Rita said, "We have nothing to discuss." And that should have ended the conversation, quite frankly, because there was nothing the officer had said that would indicate that she had a legitimate reason to be accosting Rita. Rita turned to go to her house. The police officer grabbed her. Rita instinctively pulled away. The police officer threw her to the ground and put a knee on her chest or on her back, I can't remember which, and then called for backup. When the supervisor arrived, the police officer who had cuffed Rita claimed originally that it was a traffic stop on the basis of an expired registration. That was a lie. The registration was up to date. That was something that was recorded in the conversation between Officer Herberger and her supervisor. They went through the statute book trying to find a statute upon which they could base an arrest. They couldn't find anything in the conduct of Rita Hutchins or in a traffic violation. The accusation that she was stalking this woman was ludicrous on its face. They decided to charge her with resisting and obstructing because she had turned away from the police officer to go into her own home. On that basis, they arrested her, they booked her, they took her to the jail, and she was released on bond. A few months later, this charge was thrown out of court by a judge that ruled, as any sensible person would, that the police officer had no legitimate reason to be on Rita Hutchins' property, that the arrest was unlawful, because it was pursuant to an act of trespassing, an act of criminal trespass, quite frankly, and that Rita was well within her Fifth Amendment-protected rights to refuse to talk to the police officer. So the charge was thrown out of court, and Rita was set free. The police officer was not sanctioned. She remains on the police force to this day. A few weeks later, she decided that she would file a complaint with the Risk Management Bureau, or the Risk Management Agency of the city government, asking to be compensated for her medical expenses and to be paid compensation for the unlawful arrest and for the injury that she had suffered. She had required medical attention as a result of the assault that she had experienced at the hands of Officer Herberger. The risk management official, who was also the city attorney, turned down that request. And so Rita filed notice of tort claim that she was going to be suing the city government for, among other things, false arrest and infliction of emotional distress, recovery of damages, these kinds of things. And in August of 2011, this was a little less than a year after the original incident at her home, Rita went to the Sandpoint Municipal Building to look through public records about her arrest and about a number of other incidents that she thought were relevant research for her lawsuit. And while she was there, she started to be shadowed by the city attorney and by several other people who are openly harassing her. They didn't like the fact that she was going through publicly accessible records in order to research a lawsuit against the city. Things got a little bit tense and a little bit unpleasant. Rita decided that she would go. According to her account of what happened, she put down the book that she was reading, which was a record of public arrests and police activity, and left the building. According to an account that was provided by the municipal government, as she left, she threw down a ballpoint pen she was using to make notes. She wasn't allowed to photocopy anything. She supposedly threw down this ballpoint pen, and it hit a desktop and ricocheted from the desktop, and it flew in the direction of a deputy clerk, and it hit the deputy clerk in the arm. The deputy clerk was hit in the arm by a pen that had been thrown at a desk. On this basis, Rita was charged with criminal battery against a public official. The charge assumes that she intended to make a bank shot off the desk, off the tabletop, with a ballpoint pen. In order for the charge to make sense, she would have had to have had the intent, in much the same way as somebody who's a proponent of frisbee golf or somebody who's an expert at billiards, perhaps. She would have had to have the intent to carom that pen off the desktop in order to hit that clerk. Because otherwise, you're not talking about something that's intentional. In order for it to be a crime, there has to be mens rea, there has to be criminal intent. So she was served with notice that she had to appear in court to answer to a charge of criminal battery. She didn't go to one of the court hearings. They gave her, of course, a welter of contradictory documents written in language that is intended to be difficult to understand at best and unintelligible at worst. So she managed to miss a court appointment. That led to the issuance of a bench warrant by another judge because she had missed a pretrial conference of some sort. Bear in mind, all of this is ludicrous on its face, that they would be pursuing a prosecution of a battery charge on the basis of an incident that didn't involve any injury to any human being. Another thing that's interesting about this, Dr. Stan, is that there is no criminal complaint from the alleged witness. There was a report signed by a deputy sheriff from the Bonner County Sheriff's Office on the basis of witness accounts of what happened here, what allegedly happened here. He signed an affidavit, but there was no signed criminal complaint from the supposed victim. And obviously there was no injury involved. It's not as if she had to call for a field medic in order to deal with the blunt force trauma of being hit by a ballpoint pen that had ricocheted off a desktop. But in any case, this bench warrant was issued for Rita. And the thing that's really interesting is that the judge who signed the warrant authorized it to be executed any time, either day or night. Now, that may seem like an insignificant detail to some people, but serving a warrant after the sun goes down is actually a pretty big deal in most state law, and Idaho is no exception. Here in Idaho, as is the case elsewhere, it's really quite unusual for police to serve warrants after sundown. There's a 2011 ruling by the Idaho State Supreme Court, Idaho versus Scurlock, in which the court recognized that at nighttime, and I'm quoting now from that decision, people have a heightened expectation of privacy that should not be disturbed by a knock on the door and the presentation of a search warrant. And the decision also pointed out that executing a warrant at night increases the likelihood of violence because nighttime searches cause an abrupt intrusion on sleeping occupants in a home, thus increasing the potential for a violent reaction from the occupants. So, from this perspective, it's a needless and counterproductive risk to serve a warrant at night, not only a risk to the people against whom the warrant is served, but it's also a risk to officer safety. And so unless there are exigent circumstances, unless you're dealing with something that involves the suspicion of a violent crime, or unless you're trying to arrest somebody suspected of a violent crime, if you're dealing with a hostage situation, unless there's something that is really important that involves an immediate danger to the public, you just don't serve arrest warrants. And particularly not for a bench warrant, or for a bench warrant that emerges out of a case that is so ludicrous as this.
But unless this is a case of harassment.
Yes, and that's exactly what this is. This is harassment being conducted through the forms of law. So around midnight on April 16th, Rita was asleep on the sofa in her living room of her home when there was a knock on the door. Once again, this midnight, the proverbial midnight knock. Three Bonner County Sheriff's deputies, actually two deputies and a Sandpoint police officer, knocked on the door demanding that she answer the door, that she submit herself to arrest because of this bench warrant that had been issued by a second judge having to do with this case in which she's accused of battery because a pen supposedly struck the body of a deputy city clerk. Like you say, Dr. Stan, this is transparent harassment and it just gets worse.
All right, fine. Well, we're going to be back here. Does this sort of thing happen in America, Sydney? Yes, it can when you have petty people who bid positions of power. And remember that adage, you know, power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely everyone. Absolute power corrupts absolutely everyone. Go right ahead.
I need to highlight the role of the official, I think, who's driving this absolutely absurd persecution rather than prosecution of Rita Hutchins. His name is Shane Greenbank. He's the deputy prosecutor for Bonner County, Idaho. Before this, he had been the deputy prosecutor in Kootenai County. And as I have researched his background, what I found is that there have been at least three separate cases, one of them involving several instances in which Mr. Greenbank was slapped down by appellate courts for prosecutorial misconduct, that in one specific case, this case involved, I think, at least three and maybe more specific incidents of prosecutorial misconduct, that in the aggregate denied a defendant a fair trial. So this guy is a known quantity. He's somebody who is a corrupt prosecutor in terms of being faithful to the canons of prosecutorial and legal conduct, and certainly from the perspective of somebody who upholds the Constitution. He's the fellow who has been involved in issuing most of the paperwork here and pursuing the prosecution, better stated, the persecution of Rita Hutchins. Anyhow, she was arrested after midnight on April 16th of this year on the basis of this bench warrant, which for some reason was signed by a judge authorizing that it be carried out either a day or at night. Now, this is a woman, once again, 58 years old, either 57 or 58. I don't know when her birthday is. No record of crime of any kind, no criminal record before 2011 when she was charged with resisting and obstructing. That charge was thrown out. The officer who arrested her for resisting and obstructing was ruled to be acting unlawfully. That is to say, this was an abduction. This was not a legitimate arrest. This was not a case where a police officer took somebody in custody. This is a case where a police officer conducted criminal trespass, aggravated felonious assault because the police officer was armed, and then false arrest and abduction. And nothing was done to bring about the prosecution of that police officer or to hold that police officer professionally responsible. Matter of fact, the three officers who appeared on Rita Hutchins' doorstep at midnight when she was asleep on her couch and partially undressed, very important part of this story because of the viciousness and sadism of this act. One of those officers is the live-in boyfriend of the police officer who assaulted Rita Hutchins on her doorstep, to give you an idea of just how inbred, if you will, this little municipal clique in Sandpoint is. Now, the other thing that I find really interesting about the case is that last November 14th, Rita had filed a subpoena demanding that the alleged victim, name is Melissa Ward. She's a deputy clerk for the city of Sandpoint. She demanded that the alleged witness swear out a signed criminal complaint. In other words, you have to have an identifiable flesh and blood victim. And Rita has the right to confront her accuser. The so-called victim would be the accuser. So she filed a subpoena demanding that the supposed victim swear out, on penalty of perjury, of course, a criminal complaint against her. The first district court on November 14th granted a motion by Sandpoint City Attorney Scott Campbell to quash that subpoena, ruling that, and I'm quoting now, requiring Ms. Ward, the victim in this matter, to provide a signed complaint is unreasonable. It's nothing of the sort. Requiring her to provide a signed complaint is the least that should be expected if she is indeed a victim. Otherwise, you've got somebody...
Hold that thought. We'll be right back here. Well, anyway, of course, so Rita got arrested, and you never did tell us what happened as she was arrested by three police officers, one of whom was the live-in boyfriend of the officer who had originally arrested Rita by trespassing on her property, and that case had been thrown out by a judge who said this is... So basically, Rita was arrested. Was she put in prison at the time?
She was bailed out.
She was bailed out.
She was... She's in a position now where she's basically having to hawk everything that she owns in order to pay for bail bond, because she's been arrested again for reasons that I'll get into in a little bit. She's out right now, but she has a lot of accumulated expenses that, of course, she's not able to meet, owing to the fact that she's a woman of modest means in the late sixth decade of her life, who's an isolated and helpless person being targeted by the apparatus of oppression there in Sandpoint.
I think, of course, that Senator Wyndham is bringing out other things, apparently. This woman, Rita, had said, well, as long as I'm being prosecuted, because somebody says that we had hit them with a ballpoint pen, a ballpoint pen would suppose that they had ricocheted off the top of a desk. She asked for the victim to sign a sworn statement so that the person would be guilty of perjury if it wasn't true. And, of course, they have quashed that. In other words, they can't get a complaint from the person who was supposedly accosted by the ricocheting ballpoint pen.
Yeah.
So go ahead with the story.
Yeah, what that means, there's no victim of record for this August 12, 2012 instance of battery. There's no criminal intent behind what she did. You're not going to make the case that this 57-year-old woman intended to bank shot a pen off of a tabletop and hit this woman. There's just no way that any reasonable person is going to believe this. So you have no victim of record, no criminal intent, no injury to the supposed victim. All this means that you're dealing with a patently spurious charge that was brought against Hutchins in what has to be considered a transparent effort to retaliate against her for filing a lawsuit against the city of Sandpoint, or actually filing a notice of tort claim. She's not yet filed the lawsuit against the city of Sandpoint, probably against the county government. The other thing that I find interesting about this case, I mentioned before that the risk management officer was the city attorney. Just to move forward to the narrative a little bit to bring things up to date, one of the things that happened during the course of the search of her home on April 16th was that the police found what they think is a piece of drug paraphernalia. An item of drug paraphernalia can be an old coffee can. It can be anything the police believe could be used to smoke marijuana. There's no evidence that she was smoking marijuana. There's no public record that marijuana residue was found in this item, but she's been accused of the misdemeanor offense of owning drug paraphernalia. There's no drugs found in her property during the course of the search. The judge who is going to sit in that prosecution, that misdemeanor prosecution of Rita Hutchins, assuming that this comes about, is the same official who was the risk management officer who denied her initial damage claim against the city of Sandpoint. And if I'm not mistaken, she was also the prosecutor who tried to get Rita convicted on resisting and obstructing charges as a result of what happened in November of 2011. So you've got a situation where the same person who turned down her initial damage claim and tried to get her thrown in prison for being the victim of an unlawful police assault is now going to be the judge who's going to preside over the trial of Rita Hutchins on the drug paraphernalia charge that was the result of this midnight search of her home, this midnight raid on her home, that was conducted pursuant to a warrant that was issued in this case having to do with the bogus battery charge.
Well, of course, but you would say we will not accept this judge. This judge obviously is involved. And basically what you're looking at certainly is incest within the court system and a corrupt court system. And when you have a corrupt court system, why nobody's life or property or freedom are safe?
That's exactly right. Now, I wanted to share with you the florid prose of the criminal complaint against Hutchins for alleged battery. And this was filed by Shane Greenbank, who's this ambitious and corrupt prosecutor, deputy prosecutor for Bonner County. The criminal complaint claims that, and I quote, Hutchins did willfully and unlawfully use force or violence upon the person, Melissa Ward, by striking Ward with a pen, or in the alternative, did actually intentionally and unlawfully touch or strike the person, Melissa Ward, against her will by striking Ward with a pen. This is a grave offense against the peace and dignity of the state of Idaho. That's what the criminal complaint actually says. It is impossible for a practicing adult to take that kind of thing seriously, but yet that is the basis on which these people are persecuting this helpless woman.
Well, basically, is she getting any help at all from the local radio, from the local...
We're doing what we can, Dr. Stan. That's one of the reasons I'm talking about this tonight.
All right, fine. Well, let's hope we got a lot of listeners up there in Sandpoint, and certainly the local newspaper, the local radio, and if they won't cover it, then, of course, we'll use our facilities as best we can. We'll be right back.
While the storm clouds gather far across the sea, let us swear allegiance to a land that's free. Let us all be grateful for a land so in a solemn prayer. God bless America, land that I love. Stand beside her and guide her through the night with a light from above. From the mountains, to the prairies, to the ocean, white with gold. God bless America, my home, sweet home. God bless America.
Don't be late.
No.
White with gold. God bless America. My home.
Right, Pop? Right, son.
Mountain to the prairie.
this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is William Grigg, and he's telling us the story of Rita Hutchins up there in Sandpoint, Idaho, who has become victimized by people within the government in retaliation for her effort to get compensation for injuries that was sustained during an unlawful arrest, a totally unlawful arrest, which was actually thrown out of court. But go right ahead, William.
It's really important to recognize that that was thrown out of court because it was recognized by the trial judge. I believe her name was Garland. I'm going to go back and double check that. Barbara Buchanan, forgive me. Magistrate Judge Barbara Buchanan threw that out of court because she recognized and explicitly stated that Hutchins, A, was on her own property, and B, was acting fully within her rights protected by the Fifth Amendment by not wanting to have contact with that police officer. And that nothing was done to punish the police officer for this unlawful act of aggression against Rita Hutchins. The individual who was involved in the risk management decision, the city prosecutor in Sandpoint, when Rita Hutchins filed her damage claim against the city, request for compensation for damages, was Lori Muhlenberg. She is now a magistrate judge at Sandpoint. She was the city of Sandpoint's prosecuting attorney. She was the one who tried to put Rita Hutchins in prison for the spurious charge of resisting and obstructing. She was the one who turned down the request for damages as a result of the injury that Rita had experienced. And Lori Muhlenberg is going to be, unless she is forced to recuse herself, the trial judge for what I think is an entirely spurious charge of possession of drug paraphernalia that in any case would have been discovered in the course of a search that would probably be thrown out if they were able to mount a legal challenge to the warrant, the issuance and exercise of a warrant after dark. It takes a great deal in the state of Idaho to justify the execution of an arrest warrant after dark, particularly for dealing with a bench warrant for somebody failing to appear in court. That's just not the sort of thing that is done for the most part. So you could probably successfully challenge that warrant and the execution of that warrant at midnight, for heaven's sake, in Sandpoint, Idaho, three armed strangers, you know, one of them the live-in co-fornicator of the woman who assaulted Rita Hutchins, are pounding on her door, demanding entrance to her door so they can drag her away in handcuffs. That happened in Sandpoint, Idaho. That didn't happen in Baghdad. It didn't happen in Tehran. It didn't happen in Pyongyang. It happened in Sandpoint, Idaho. Now, I want to elaborate upon a couple of points here that I think are very important about what they're trying to do to her now. I mentioned, of course, before the break, the language of the criminal complaint written by Shane Greenbank, the ambitious and corrupt prosecutor who's promoting all of this. Of course, he exerted himself with every resource of verbal hyperbole at his command to try to depict the actions of the alleged actions of Rita Hutchins as a grave offense against the peace and dignity of the state of Idaho, and her actions, her alleged actions, were to throw a pen at a desk that ricocheted off the tabletop and hit, without injuring, a deputy city clerk who has not filed a sworn criminal complaint. There is no victim of record here, in other words. There is an affidavit filed by a deputy sheriff on the basis of what he was told that has the standing of hearsay. If you don't have somebody who's willing to file a criminal complaint, there's no reason to proceed with the prosecution. How many times, Dr. Stan, do we hear about situations where police say, well, nobody was willing to file a criminal complaint, nobody was willing to press charges, we couldn't do anything about investigating the matter, the prosecutor says we can't pursue the matter because there's nobody here to press charges. Nobody's pressing charges against Rita Hutchins because the alleged victim won't sign a criminal complaint. And the magistrate court there is saying that they're not going to require that she does. It's unreasonable to expect that she would sign a criminal complaint. If there's nobody that's pressing charges, then there's no case. So that, once again, underscores the entirely spurious and illegitimate nature of what's being done here. The other thing I want to underscore here with respect to the nature of this prosecutor, Shane Greenbank, is the fact that he is given to theatricality and dishonest exercise of the function of the prosecutor's office, which is why he has been repeatedly censured by appellate judges for prosecutorial misconduct. Prosecutorial misconduct is a form of corruption. It's not necessarily the sort of thing that means that he's being illicitly enriched personally. in monetary or other material ways, it means that he is misusing his office. That's the type of corruption we're talking about. I don't know if this guy is doing anything else that would reach a threshold question of criminal behavior or corruption of a monetary form. What I do know is that in terms of the way he has exercised the function of his office, he has behaved corruptly. Back in September 2008, there was a domestic violence trial when Mr. Greenbank was the deputy prosecuting attorney in nearby Kootenai County. During the opening arguments, he broke down and cried as he was making a melodramatic recitation of the alleged crimes of the defendant. And this performance, no other word is suitable, didn't impress the trial judge, First District Judge Fred Gilber, who brought down the gavel and declared a mistrial, saying that he was not going to allow Greenbank to manipulate the jury. And Greenbank's initial reaction was to lie by insisting that he hadn't been crying and that he had no intent to appeal to the passions of the jury. The problem was the transcript recorded him admitting that he did have tears, and as he said, I did have tears running down my face. I did have snot running down my face. He admitted, in other words, that he was crying. He was insisting that this isn't something he was doing to manipulate the jury. It was obviously something he was doing to manipulate the jury. And then in the decision announcing the mistrial, Judge Gilbert acknowledged that in a recent case, the Court of Appeals had singled out the Kootenai County Prosecutor's Office for appealing to the passions or prejudice of the jury. And that's one of the cases I referred to earlier where Greenbank and his colleagues were both censured because they had been engaging in manipulative behavior. It's not just that. I mean, there are several cases where they've been swatted down for paperwork errors that involved documents that were not authenticated, documents of dubious provenance, withholding discovery, withholding important details that they're legally required to turn over to the defense, this kind of thing. This is the guy, in other words, this the track record of the guy who's taking a completely illegitimate case to trial here because there's nobody pressing charges. If there's nobody pressing charges, there should be no criminal prosecution. Now, he has no credentials, Mr. Greenbank, as a psychologist. Now, why do I bring this up? The tactic they're using now against Rita is they are trying to force her to undergo a psychiatric evaluation for the purpose of having her involuntarily committed. Now, why is this important? It's important because she has a deadline in July to finish the paperwork and to file her tort claim, to file her lawsuit against the city of Sandpoint and Bonner County. If they can get her involuntarily committed, of course, that deadline is going to pass. The other thing I should point out in this connection, I've been talking with Rita over the last couple of days about things she has discovered. Apparently, what they have also done is they have reset the clock in terms of when they would be dating, backdating the beginning of this criminal case against her. Because after a certain, I can't remember what the deadline is, but if the criminal proceedings don't start within a date certain, then they have to be dismissed because it would no longer be a fair and speedy trial. But apparently they've gone back and they've rewritten the record so as to begin the prosecution, I think, in April rather than last November. And so that would allow them to run up the clock rather than running out the clock. They're putting more time on the clock, in other words. There's all kinds of dishonest things that they're apparently doing. But in order that was issued on May 2nd by Magistrate Judge Deborah Heisey, who's one of several judges involved in this fiasco, Greenbank, first of all, had filed a request for a psychiatric evaluation saying that Rita has exhibited, quote, unusual behaviors and effects both in court and in her filings. It is evident that her mood is changeable, that her thoughts are disorganized. And once again, this guy has no credentials as a psychologist. What he's saying is that she appears to act weird, in his supposedly professional opinion. This is a guy who had such fragile emotional control that he broke down in court in 2008 and as a result was swatted down by a trial judge. This guy is trying to say that Rita Hutchins' mood is changeable. No, this guy rises at the drop of a hat, and he's accusing this woman who admittedly in some of the legal proceedings into which she's been thrust has not acquitted herself well because she's not a lawyer, but she's not behaved irrationally. She's just displayed evidence that she doesn't have professional credentials to be an attorney to represent herself. And she doesn't trust any of the court-appointed lawyers that they're trying to give her as her public defender. And that's probably a wise precaution on her part, because most court-appointed defense attorneys are simply foils of the prosecutor. So on May 2nd, Judge Deborah Heisey issued an order authorizing or actually directing, commanding Reed to undergo a psychiatric evaluation. And there was a claim that was embedded in this, ex parte and without a particle of supporting evidence, listed among the examples of Hutchins' supposed unusual behaviors and effects was the act of, quote, battering the assigned prosecuting attorney, that is Greenbank, outside the court when he served papers to her in the clerk's office. She was accused of battering the prosecutor. The prosecutor's not signed a criminal complaint. There's no substantiation or description of this act of battery. Of what did this act of battery consist? Greenbank attempted to hand a sheaf of documents to Rita. She prefers to receive these things through the mail for record-keeping purposes, so she handed them back to Greenbank, whereupon he said, "You struck me with these papers. That's battery." I'm serious. Now, I don't know whether this made him cry. On the basis of past performance, perhaps this would be sufficient to make him cry. But that is the episode that is embedded in this May 2nd order requiring Rita to undergo a psychiatric evaluation, that she supposedly battered Greenbank. Now, they're creating a record here. They're creating a paper trail that's intended to turn her into a repeat offender. And in the notice that she received from Greenbank's office about the case that's being assembled against her, it's clear that what they're trying to do is they're trying to bring in as many people from the Sandpoint Police Department and the Bonner County Sheriff's Office and people who are attached to the city and county government to create a portrait of her as a danger to the public. They have listed on this witness list of people who would be testifying in this case, should the first battery case go to trial, police officers who were not there at the time that the alleged battery took place. One of the officers who was listed as a witness is none other than Teresa Heberer, who was the police officer who assaulted her.
Is there any way, of course, that this could be taken either to a higher state court or to a federal court and bring charges against them for harassment? And I would think she would have an excellent case for massive, certainly, a lawsuit against the city based upon simply a pattern of harassment and irrationality.
Yes, she has to file what's called a 1983 motion, a civil rights lawsuit, under Section 1983 of the U.S. Code, which deals with the abuse of power and damages that are done to the civil rights of somebody who's on the receiving end of official abuse.
And isn't there any lawyer there that would take a case like this, and certainly on a contingency basis?
We're doing what we can to find somebody that description. There are some people in and around Sandpoint who are either current or recently retired attorneys who have expressed an interest in her case. This is a woman who has no resources, and just yesterday, she received a second order to undergo a psychiatric evaluation. She went to visit the psychiatrist last week. They had an amiable chat. The psychiatrist actually told her, you have to stand up for your rights. He wrote a report that she's not been able to see because it was put under seal. That's something that should be provided to her under discovery, but it was put under seal so she couldn't see it. What that means, to my cynical eyes, is that what the psychiatrist wrote in his evaluation was exculpatory, or that it cleared her. The thing is, she's now insisting, and I think this is all she can do, that her Fifth Amendment right against self-incrimination means she doesn't have to go forward and undergo the psychiatric evaluation. There's plenty of case law to support that contention.
All right, fine. You need to find an attorney who will take this case on a contingency basis, and I hope she ends up owning Sandpoint, Idaho. Before we go on, basically, you hate to think of wasting the city's money on something like this, but basically, if they can do this to Rita, they can do it to anyone, and when you have the people that irresponsible in positions of power, why are the old adage, certainly power corrupts and absolute power corrupts absolutely everyone, certainly should be or never be forgotten. Before we go on, William, I want you to tell, first of all, our listeners how they can get in touch with you, how they can get your material, how they can certainly get your website, how they can get your PayPal button. And then, of course, is there any sort of a committee or any sort of a site where they can actually help Rita if they'd like to?
Well, to address the last issue first, that's something that we're discussing, setting up some kind of a Kickstarter, some kind of a PayPal account to help her. And one of the things that I've been discussing is approaching John Whitehead and some of the people involved with his organization to look at this case. My website, Pro Libertate, is found at freedominourtime.blogspot.com, freedominourtime.blogspot.com, or just go to Google and type in Pro Libertate or type in William N. Drake. Some combination of those search terms should provide you with Pro Libertate blog as the first return. I do have a PayPal button at the bottom of every essay, and I really do appreciate everything that people have done to help support me and my family and to support my work. And on that list, really at the top of that list, Dr. Stan, would be you and your wonderful wife. People have been very generous to us. That's basically what's been sustaining us. This is important work, but it's not terribly remunerative. This is not something that people do by way of a career. It's something that people do by way of a vocation, almost in the religious sense. But we need to do something, as you say, Dr. Stan, to find adequate legal representation for Rita Hutchins, because this case is in so many ways the perfect encapsulation of what we're seeing happen nationally and internationally. Arbitrary power exercised by petty, officious, bottomlessly corrupt people at the expense of somebody who is completely innocent. Her only offense was to be on the receiving end of criminal violence by an armed stranger in a government-issued costume, and then to complain about it and to seek redress for the injury that she had suffered. And by doing so, she ended up at cross purposes with a fetid little municipal clique that is determined to ruin her life and, if necessary, to have her indefinitely confined, either for contempt because she refuses to undergo a completely gratuitous psychiatric evaluation, or confined in a mental institution as a result of that. That's Soviet-style abuse of power. In the Soviet Union, they used to send people to the psychiatric hospital because they dared to confound the will of the Politburo. Same thing's happening in Sandpoint, Idaho, of all the unlikely places. And if it's like this in the Greenwood, what is it like in the dry?
Well, let me just mention Pacific Justice Institute and Brad Dacus. We can check you. I'd like to check on this. Why the two legal centers that might at least have something to offer legal organizations we've had contact with. And their whole concept is to try to get judicial fairness. We'll be back in just a minute to wrap up the program this evening. But ladies and gentlemen, when one person's life is put in jeopardy by vice in the inadequate legal system, criminal legal system, everybody is in danger. William, you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Dr. Stan, I really do appreciate what you said in terms of the implications of this case. This is a wonderful illustration of what's happening in terms of the embedded and, quite frankly, the pandemic, rather, abuse of power that characterizes our system right now. It, in so many ways, is reflective of what's happening. You talk about the IRS being used by the Obama administration to go after its political enemies. You talk about the way that they have been illegally obtaining phone records of journalists in order to pursue whistleblowers. This is the same mentality. This is a different application of the same kinds of corrupt ambition. And this is the sort of a battle that can be won if people would take of their time and the resources to help this poor woman. This is a battle where we can actually obtain some modicum of justice on behalf of somebody who's being persecuted. Little battles like this are so significant because little battles in the aggregate, in the cumulative sense, do add up to big victories. And I don't know why it is that I have a burden on my heart for people who are being treated this way. And quite frankly, I've found out over the last few days that there are people in Sandpoint who, as a result of what I've written and publicized regarding what's going on there, who want to do me harm. I've been receiving threats of potential legal action as if anything I have written is either A, untrue, or B, defamatory. They are neither, of course. But this is the sort of thing that we need to confront anytime and every time we can, where we see somebody who is on the receiving end of this type of focused and brazen injustice. I really think that it is something that is part of our duty. Those of us profess to be Christians, part of the duties that we read about in the New Testament, about coming to the aid of the weak and the beleaguered, This is the sort of thing that we can and should do in terms of helping somebody who is innocent and being persecuted for no reason that would withstand moral scrutiny. So I do hope, I do really hope that we can find some help for Reed and people will rally to her cause.
Well, I certainly hope that you can, and I think what you need to do is get some sort of a PayPal button, something of that sort, set up. I know you're in the process of doing that, and perhaps that we could do another program on this before too long, or we could even have you come on to our other programs with the larger audiences and basically put the information out and hope we could at least raise some funds to help. But I would think Pacific Justice Institute and the Sidney Brad Dacus' organization might be legal organizations that would help in event. William, thank you so very much. We did get the article. I finished reading it. It's excellent as always. Until next week at the same time, thank you so very much for being with us.
God bless you.
Good night. And this is Dr. Stan, and we'll be back in a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I hope you enjoyed William. And Chris is just putting forward a case where he feels this woman is being treated unjustly. And, of course, William is getting death threats because he's been writing about this and trying to get information out. And basically, the good people should be rallying behind a woman who's being discriminated against and who's being persecuted by a corrupt legal system. And believe me, ladies and gentlemen, we do have corrupt legal systems. Some places we have excellent judges, and other places, well, I was just reading where a judge had actually been indicted. Why? Because he was having, he was hearing a lot of cases having to do with drugs. He was insisting that the drugs be brought into court so that he could see them. And of course, that he was keeping the drugs and using them and selling them. And of course, when he was actually arrested for this, he said, well, gee, I just was having emotional problems. That's why I was stealing the drugs. Ladies and gentlemen, when you have judges who are corrupt, they should be in prison, as should be prosecutors, as should police. And basically, but why should we be surprised these things are happening? We've taken God and prayer and right and wrong and morality out of our schools and out of our government. And we couldn't even during this terrible episode there in Oklahoma, where the teachers were not supposed to pray when their children's lives were in danger. One of the teachers came forward and said, but I did pray. I wasn't supposed to, but I laid down on the four children and I prayed for them. What has happened to America when teachers aren't supposed to be allowed to pray to defend children? Ladies and gentlemen, we're in real trouble, and I believe God is going to bring his judgment on this country unless we can get people to understand that we're involved in a spiritual battle and there are really forces of organized evil, and we must demand that they do away with this wall of separation. There is no wall of separation between church and state. Remember those words of Thomas Jefferson? God, who gave us life, gave us liberty. But can the liberty of a nation be secure when the conviction has been forgotten that liberty is the gift of God? I tremble for my country when I reflect that God is just and his justice will not sleep forever. And ladies and gentlemen, those words are chiseled into the Jeffersonian Memorial in Washington, D.C. And that basically we want to mention that we're going to be taking a Monday off. We will not be here on Monday, so we're going to be doing replays under any circumstances. We do hope that many of you out there, if you'd like to help William, if you can always get in touch with us, and we'll put you in touch with him if you'd like to help Rita. And certainly we need to get the good people mobilized across America to help those who are in need. But the most important thing is we need to return to a moral foundation for this country. And you need to get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, and you need to understand what's going on. You can get my book by calling 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we ask you to certainly consider seriously getting my talk on Agenda 21, The Covert Plan, and on Population Control, The Covert Agenda, and on The Forbidden Secret. And if you get those DVDs, why, you'll have a great understanding of really what's going on, because you go to our website, radioliberty.com. That's radioliberty.com. You can watch many of our DVDs there. You can listen to our programs. You can read our newsletters. You can read my Population Control Agenda monograph. And, of course, remember currently, why the Radio Liberty newsletter is being written by William Grigg. So basically, of course, we ask you to understand that behind everything going on are organized satanic forces. This is not imaginary. There really are certainly spiritual forces that work within our society. That's, of course, what the so-called extraterrestrials are. That's what UFOs are. They're all manifestations of this other dimension. You and I live in a material world, but there's a mystical world. You and I live in a subjective world. There's a spiritual world. And what we need to do is let people understand the true nature of the spiritual battle that's taking place. We ask you to pray for America. Remember our number, 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Please pray for Radio Liberty, our provision and our protection.
Let us all be grateful for a land so fair as we raise our voices in a solemn prayer. God bless America.
Show. We are so happy to have you join us this Feel Good Friday. But warning, duct tape will be needed. Even though it is Feel Good Friday, they're at it again. You know, we would have nothing to talk about on this program, Josh, but they give us such good material, don't you think?
It's pretty easy.
They make our job so easy, man. All we have to do is come on here and say, you ain't gonna believe this story. Oh, my word. It is full of it. Well, I hope that you get to reality after the show and go plant your gardens, your flowers, or whatever.
Yes.
I got an issue, man. I was kept awake last night for 3.5 hours by a bird outside that was so loud.
What bird was
4.5 hours. No, it sounded like whip, whip-a-will, whip-whip, yeah. But it was so loud. It was like a boombox with noise. And I stayed awake. I want to know, what have they genetically altered yeah. these birds or something? A hybrid bird out there?
It's probably hollering into your gutters or something.
Well,
so I had to echo throughout the.
I don't know what was happening, but I was watching TV.